It's a story of Saudi Arabian scale wealth in the middle of a dry, inhospitable part of Oklahoma. In the late 1800s, the Osage Indians found themselves in a situation where the supposedly valueless land they were settled on was found to have extraordinary wealth in the form of oil below the surface. And the Osage, in this case, actually owned the mineral rights. The legal and geological facts made the Osage some of the wealthiest people in the world by the first few decades of the 20th century. But then they started dying off mysteriously in a case of greed and brutality and jealousy. It was a case taken up by the young FBI. David Gran, a journalist, spent half a decade researching and writing about how the oil-wealthy Osage killings would become one of the Federal Bureau of Investigation's first homicide investigations. His book, Killers of the Flower Moon, The Osage Murders and the Birth of the FBI, draws on new evidence behind the conspiracy that still haunts Oklahoma to this day.
I read a lot about a woman named Molly Burkhart, an Osage woman who was born in 1886. And in many ways, she is typical of the Osage then. She straddled both two centuries and two civilizations. She grew up in a lodge, speaking Osage, practicing Osage traditions. And then because of these massive oil deposits under their land that made them incredibly wealthy, within a few decades, she's living in a mansion. She's married to a white settler. Many of these whites were drawn in by the wealth. She's speaking English. And then, of course, while she's straddling these worlds and trying to kind of navigate between them, her family becomes a prime target of a criminal conspiracy where whites who were drawn into the area because of the oil begin to target them for their oil money, and really what is one of the most sinister crimes in American history.
Is the situation of how the oil was discovered and how it was clear that the Osage deserved a piece of that wealth, you know, is that like There Will Be Blood? Is that sort of like that movie, that somebody would come during the day, a geologist, and then sign a contract and this would be the deal?
Yeah, so this is where there was a very important chapter of history which happened with the Osage, which set their fate apart from many other American Indian nations, which was they were, like so many other American Indian nations, driven off their land. They once controlled the central part of the country. They were then bunched up in a reservation in Kansas under siege again from white settlers. There was a massacre. And it was then that an Osage chief had stood up and he said, we should move to this territory, which was then an Indian territory, would later become Oklahoma, because the land was rocky and it was infertile. And the white man would finally leave us alone. And so this land that was seemingly worthless, they actually purchased it. So they had a deed to their own land, which is already an important detail. They then resettled. There was only a couple thousand of them. The migrations had taken a tremendous toll on them. Then when oil was discovered on their land and their tribe was being allotted in 1906, they slipped into their treaty a very curious provision at the time, which said, we shall control all the subsurface mineral rights to their land.
So they had national rights, they had property rights, and they had mineral rights.
Exactly right. They had become the world's first underground reservation. And so they controlled all this. The only way anyone could inherit shares in that mineral trust was through inheritance. That was the only way. And that was partly what led to these very sinister, sophisticated plots.
How much money are we talking about?
By 1919, some of these massive deposits were found. And by 1923, in that year alone, these 2,000 or so Osage collectively received what would be worth today more than $400 million. They have become the richest people per capita in the world.
What was the tension like between the success of these Native Americans and the hardscrabble existence that was the norm in much of that part of the prairie?
Well, the greatest tension came from whites. This wealth provoked all sorts of bewildering reactions, and it got to the point that prejudice was so strong that members of the U.S. government and other Americans began to scapegoat the Osage for their wealth. Members of Congress would literally hold hearings saying, what are we going to do about these Osage? How can they have all this money? They can't handle it. And they went so far as to pass legislation requiring many Osage to have white guardians. This system was quite literally racist. It was based on the quantum of Osage blood. So if you were a full-blooded Osage, you were deemed quote-unquote incompetent and given a guardian. And here you could be a great chief who led a nation, who had millions of dollars in your trust, and you could have a white guardian telling you you can buy this car or not that car, or you can get this toothpaste at the corner store. And not only was the system racist, it also created one of the largest state and federally sanctioned criminal enterprises, because many of these guardians began to swindle millions of dollars.
The shocking thing about this story is that in the midst of unimaginable wealth, discrimination, injustice, prejudice, hatred, they couldn't succeed even with all those zeros after the dollar sign.
Yes. And in fact, the two forces fused together, which was unbelievable avarice and greed by white settlers with prejudice. And those two forces combine to produce
a final solution.
A final solution. Exactly right.
What happened?
So they began to be systematically targeted one by one, and there were poisonings. Poisoning was one of the prime means of killing. And the reason was that it was an incredibly lawless time back then in the country, and there was very little training, and there was also a lot of corruption. And so you could slip somebody a poison and then quickly cover it up.
The FBI at the time, how were they brought to this investigation, which would require the most sophisticated of forensics and a real ability to get inside a criminal conspiracy?
They are brought into the case in 1923 when the Osage Tribal Council, after more than two dozen Osage were murdered, and that's just the official death toll, and nobody had done anything. They had crusaded for justice, but because of prejudice, these crimes were neglected. A few people who had tried to stop the criminals, they were killed themselves. And they had very little jurisdiction over murder cases, but they had jurisdiction over American Indian reservations. And that's why this case fell to them. And they ultimately follow the money, and they are able to capture some of the killers. But one of the things I try to document in the book is that the Bureau and Hoover closed the case prematurely. And because of that, a much deeper and darker conspiracy went unexposed. And the breadth of the killing was far greater, and the number of killers far greater than the Bureau ever was able to expose and handle.
If this was a Hollywood movie, the end of the story would be some corporation called the Osage Oil Company would have gotten all the money and all the oil, and that would be the end of it. Who benefited here? It seems so piecemeal.
This was piecemeal in the sense that there were many seemingly ordinary people who were perpetrating these crimes to individually benefit for their families. And so the wealth was dispersed through these inheritance schemes, and millions and millions and millions of dollars were swindled and never recovered.
What are the scars of this in the territory that you visited?
So one of the things I did was track down the descendants of both the murderers and the victims. And what's amazing is that to this day, descendants of the murderers and the victims often live in the same neighborhoods. They live side by side. Their fates are intertwined. And in many ways, that is the story of America. And when you interview the descendants, particularly the victims, I interviewed Molly Burkhart's granddaughter, a lovely woman named Marjorie, and she could tell me what it was like to grow up without relatives, without aunts, to have the money taken, what it was like for her father who grew up in this house of secrets. You get a sense of how this is still living history and how it still reverberates to this day.
David Grant is the author of Killers of the Flower Moon, The Osage Murders, and The Birth of the FBI. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With three updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.